This is Rooted Recovery Stories. My name is Patrick Custer. I am probably the most excited that I've ever been for this episode here today. I've got a special co-host here with me. One of the funniest people I know, fellow Nashvillian, man in recovery, and quite talented journalist from the Tennessean, Brad Schmidt.
Thank you so much for the invite.
Absolutely.
Excited.
I'm so excited you wore shoes today.
They were not flip-flops, they were sandals.
And I have to say, our special guest, the best intro I could come up with is the fact that I feel like his name might be more, it could rival how many times it's associated with the word fancy to that of Reba. Walker.
How about that?
Hayes, country superstar, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Come on. Let's go. Good to see you too, Brad.
You too.
Absolutely.
Psyched.
I didn't know Brad was going to be sitting right where he is, so he's cheating by looking at my notes while we're doing this. So,
as Walker said earlier, you got this.
Yeah. Well, thank you. So how's everybody? Good this morning?
Good. Just waking up, you know, a couple days on the road.
It is early.
Yeah. It is pretty early. Yeah.
On a Monday.
Yeah. Glad to be here, though.
Yeah. Glad that you spent your time with us. You recently recovering from some stuff, some COVID?
Yeah. Two weeks ago, it got me good. I don't know. I've had it three times, you know, the lifetime of the actual disease you have. Yeah.
Really?
And
Can I get a mask?
I know. Now I feel dirty. Thanks for COVID shaming us. Yeah. It's funny. When I say three times, I'm embarrassed. Like, I guess most people haven't
had. You're a survivor.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I am.
Yeah.
I feel like I've missed a strain or two, but this third, it got me. I kind of got cocky because the second time, nothing, like kind of almost asymptomatic. And then this third time, man, it knocked me down. But I was able to do, we had two shows this past weekend and they were fine. So back in the saddle.
Well, I'm glad you're back in the saddle and I'm glad you're here. And I want to start things off before we get into the more meaty part and the serious part of your story. We normally do this at the end of the episode. But we're going to start off.
Okay.
Rapid fire.
Okay.
Ooh. We're going to go. Yeah.
Right away.
Don't look at mine.
All right.
We're taking
you
turns.
You both have rapid.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Let's go. I don't know what Brad's are and he doesn't know what mine are. All right. What's the most fancy thing about you?
The house we're building a barn dominium. I think I'm saying the word right. So that is by far the fanciest thing we've ever done with our fancy like money. So
love it.
Yeah, we're building a barn do.
Are we going back and forth?
Yeah.
Okay, great. For your next music video dance partner, would you rather have Taylor Swift or Travis Kelce?
Oh, Kelce, 100%. I mean, I'm a Taylor fan, but dude, I love football. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
What's the least fancy thing about you?
My Prius. I drive a Prius and I love it. So yeah, I mean, I'm not trading it in anytime soon. It's got some dents in it. Yeah.
How many miles?
I don't even know. It was a hand-me-down. I don't pay attention to that. It still runs. So we're
that's
good.
Awesome. Smooth peanut butter or crunchy?
Crunchy, 100%. Let's go.
Okay. What actors would you choose to play you and Lainey in a sitcom about your life?
I'm sorry. I don't know. I mean, if I'm like big dreaming and I want to like elevate myself.
Don't limit yourself.
Okay. I'd be like Hugh Jackman and Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Wow.
Yeah. You know.
I love it.
I mean, I'm shooting for the stars.
Yes.
Here, okay. Like I'm no Hugh Jackman. Lainey is way hotter than Catherine Zeta, but I always had a crush on her.
Good answer. So,
yeah. There we go.
I love it.
Every bit of that was good.
Nice.
The country outside the U.S. you would most like to visit?
I mean, I'd like to go back to Rwanda. I've been there once, and I'd love to go back. I'd love to take my wife to Italy, though, if we're not going places I've already been.
Ooh, yeah. Nice. That'd be good.
Yeah. I feel like it's romantic, you know?
100%.
Yeah.
All right. New level of vulnerability here. What's your best accent that you can do?
Like impression?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Either a person or like an actual like nationality.
Okay, I don't even know what I would say. This is Australian.
Okay, can you do for us the few lines from New Money in your Australian
accent? New money, like it's old money. Maybe our kids can be owed money down the road. I don't know. I'm forgetting the words because it's hard to think about.
That's good. That's good.
I don't know. I don't.
For a second there, I thought I was looking at a Hugh Jackman.
Back to Hugh. I was thinking that.
And that was good. 100%. Good channel.
No doubt. Yeah. You have one superpower. What is going to be?
Me and my kids, we argue about this all the time, and I flip-flop back and forth. I'm obsessed with it, like ocean. Aquariums and stuff, just the quiet. So I think I would swim. I would like swim, like be dolphin-esque.
Yeah. Aquaman.
But it's hard. It's hard to compete with flying, you know. That
would be my choice.
Yeah, I feel like that's pretty cliche. But yeah, I think it'd be sick if you could just like swim like a bullet, you know. A lot of the Earth's ocean, so you could get a lot of places.
True.
Dig it.
All right, what's the weirdest thing a fan has ever done?
You know, God bless them. They've shown up at our house, you know, from far, far away. And it is weird, but I have mad respect for those people. And they had their kids with them. And again, just respect, you know, for trying to make their kids a year, you know, and just show up on our lawn. And I was cool with it. I'm fine with it. I'm just so grateful that we have fans that would do that. You know, it's a little awkward, but sure, it's cool.
Man, yeah. That's some humility right there.
Amazing.
I mean, yeah, they just got out of their SUV and we were their summer trip, you know? So
wow.
Yeah.
That happens to Patrick all the time. unlike you, he just turns on the lawn sprinkler system and he's just like, get out.
I don't know. Like I said, I mean, wouldn't you at least applaud the commitment?
Absolutely. I love attention. What are you talking about?
It's like, and what the chances that I would be there, you know, they could have missed, you know,
right.
And I wasn't there and they brought their whole family. Wow. But I thought it was cool.
I think it's cool too.
Yeah.
All right. Last one. Okay. I didn't tell you I did a sixth. So what's a secret talent you have?
I don't have any talent. I mean, a secret talent.
Juggling.
I can juggle. Mm. I mean, is that, I don't know. It's not going to make me any money, but yeah, I can juggle. I can juggle actually pretty good. I got one of those videos for Christmas one time and just,
on how to juggle?
Yeah, it was like video, you know, you get a video. It was like a VHS with three juggling balls. So, you know, I can do that. And that's pretty cool. But, you know, we do the trick shots. So I love anything sports and stuff like that. But nice. You know what's funny? If I have a talent, I don't keep it. I'm like, hey, right. I'm talented, right. You know. Yeah. Check this out. So, like, I don't know anything the world hasn't seen at least twice. So.
I feel like we can't relate to that at all.
There's no secret to the show.
Right. It was
fantastic. Oh, my gosh. Okay, this was good. This is probably my favorite rapid fire we've
Come
done.
On.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, so now the ice is broken.
It is.
Let's dive in.
Come on.
So what was your early life like as a kid?
Yeah. You know, I feel like an only child, but I'm really the last of nine. Me and Brad have talked about this. My parents both have four kids apiece. My dad had three girls and a boy, and my mom had three boys and a girl. And then they got married and had me. And so I very much feel like an only child, but I also grew up with parents who were like over the kid. Like I didn't have a lot of rules, you know, curfew. So I was the last of many, you know, and I enjoyed the benefits of that unruliness, I guess. But then also at the same time, I didn't have your typical, like, you know, kids around the table. And you know, there were only a few at home still. So, but man, I just, you know, just your normal insecure kid in Mobile, you know, trying to fit in. I tried to, my identity or my false identity was like a lot of children sports, you know, that was my way to mattering, I guess, yeah. You know, as a kid. My dad was very, very playful, funny, sing in line at Cracker Barrel guy, embarrass your kid guy. You know, he was that guy, really good at what he did. He was a retired music minister and sold real estate. So, you know, I fell asleep.
Retired by the time you came along?
Yeah. I never got to see him really doing the music thing, but I heard a lot of great stories, and he sang in church and stuff like that. So I feel like I got a good glimpse of what that might have been like. But he loved real estate, man. He sold the crap out of houses. I mean, he just, it's like that kind of was his identity. You know, he found that later in life and just took off, and he succeeded and he did really well and he loved it. So yeah, you know, growing up, always had a legal pad, you know, because there was always one in his briefcase. And I always, you know, I went to work with my mom and dad a lot. They started a real estate company. And so I always had like fun supplies to play with, you know, pens with springs in them. And so I feel like that's kind of where creativity came from. But, you know, I was torn between music and sports growing up. You know, it just wasn't like cool to be in the band or choir, but I secretly enjoyed it. And but man, just about as normal, average, you know, go at a childhood as you can imagine. Just, you know, again, I played sports, but it's not like I was going pro at something. I might have thought I was, but I was delusional. You know, praise God, you know, I met Lainey. I knew Lainey my whole life, but we didn't start dating until like 11th grade. But
how long, like whole life, like since?
Yeah, I mean, we went to the same pre-K through 12. So I knew of Lainey, but like, honestly, I never would have had the guts to talk to her without a beer in my hand. I mean, I just wasn't that, you know, I know we're going to talk about alcohol and all that stuff, but I was that kid who I never would have spoken to a girl until I had a beer, and I was like, all of a sudden I was hilarious. You know, I was funny. I was awesome. I went from like definitely not talking to that girl to like, sup girl, you know? And so, yeah, you know, in 11th grade, we kind of had some classes that, you know, intermingled and stuff. And so I talked to Lainey. I'm glad I did. But, yeah, man, just, I don't know, just pretty normal.
You know, let me push back.
Yeah. Come on.
If I can.
Yeah. Push.
You had a difficult relationship with your dad.
Yeah.
And you grew up as the youngest of nine.
Right.
And with a workaholic dad.
Right.
And you were a little bit invisible in the family.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I you know, my dad and I saw each other in the morning. And that's about it, you know. And he would be at work. And Brad and I have talked about this, you know, at games and whatnot. You know, I saw an empty chair. You know, it was like, where's Dad? You know, he didn't. And I also, you know, my relationship with my dad, a lot of it was thwarted by me. You know, I'm one of those people that, if I can't earn, you know, your attention or your respect immediately, and you're not going to give it to me, I'm out. Like, I'm not going to try with you. I'm actually going to push you away, you know? Mm. And so, you know, I did that as a child, and I just wasn't a good kid. I mean, I acted out, you know,
you get in trouble for the most?
Drinking. Really? You know, drinking, being obnoxious, you know, in class. You know, if you were a type of teacher that I had to put forth a lot of effort to win or earn your respect, I did not respect you one bit. And I was not going to, I was not going to fight for your approval at all. And so there were some teachers, you know, who, I don't know, they understood that. You know, I had a coach or a couple teachers that invested in me regardless. And I responded really well to them. And I'm so grateful that they existed. But I was not a great teenager. You know, I didn't want to be around my parents. Their idea of what I needed to be or how I needed to succeed, I wanted to go the other way. You know, I was very rebellious kid. And
do you think it was because you didn't feel like it was possible to achieve it, or it was a defiance?
It's what they wanted. Yeah, it was defiance. I wouldn't say I'm a wise human now, but I have kids of my own.
Yeah.
And I really was. I was a rebellious child, it was defiance. It's not like I didn't grow up in a loving home. My parents made many mistakes, but I made as many as
sure.
they did.
You were a kid.
Yeah.
And we've talked. As I look back, I try to look back and be like, but that didn't give me a free pass to just be an asshole. But I was, man. I was always getting in trouble. I drove a lot. I would take my dad's keys without a license, and just have the town to myself, And
I did that as an adult.
There you go. Yeah. I was a selfish kid. It was just all about me.
Sure.
I don't like it. Here's what I don't like.
Yeah.
Just
come on.
I don't like the self-judgment. I don't like the way you see your younger self. I don't like it at all. Here's why. You were having a tough time. You weren't getting the kind of attention and or maybe love or support you needed from your parents, and you acted out to get it. And it's so typical. Like, you just described like half the teenagers I know
yeah.
knew then. And so it wasn't like you were doing anything outrageous. You were not a bad kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You were just looking for a little attention. So I don't like the way you're talking about your younger self.
Yeah.
Probably because it strikes home for me.
Yeah.
Because I also acted out and drank a lot as a kid, looking for some attention and for some medication and for some validation.
Right.
So I don't know. I'd like you to be kinder to the younger Walker.
Ah.
And I understand that kid a lot.
Yeah.
And I think you are like a lot of kids who grew up with a difficult
right.
Household. I don't know.
Well, yeah. I appreciate it. I mean, and just so we're clear, I agree with everything you're saying, but now as a parent, I understand the parent. I understand the parental side. Mm. And I one thing I failed to realize ever growing up, which you can't as a child, is that your parents are kids.
Right.
Yeah. And look, I'm 43, and I swear you got, we just talked about it. My dad's gone. It was his birthday the other day, and I didn't even remember till that evening. But when my wife reminded me, hey, how'd you? She was so kind. She said, hey, how you feel? It's your dad's birthday. And when she says that, I feel 14. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And then I'm only reminded, my dad didn't have it figured out.
Yeah.
He work was a controllable place for him to go cope with all this crap that mm-hmm. we're about to talk about,
yes.
And God love him, he had a kid at 43. He had a little baby, I agree with you 100%. But then I also, there's a whole half of my parents' life that I didn't see.
Yeah.
I did not see. God love. I mean, my childhood was chump change compared to their childhood. Yeah. I'm very grateful that whatever the damage they did, hey, they did. And I'm going to damage my kids in many ways too, but it was a lot better than it could have been,
True.
I probably would appreciate their absence, more if I knew what their presence might have meant. If that makes any sense.
Sure does.
So yeah,
I think it's fine to acknowledge that we got damaged and to have grace for our parents at the same time. Yeah. I think those two things can absolutely coexist. It'd
be lovely.
My mom beat me a lot.
Yeah,
and verbally abused me. And when I came to find out what her childhood was, holy crap. Mm. Like, wow. I mean, she absolutely. So I can say, hey, that really damaged me, and have a lot of grace and love and forgiveness for my mom at the same time. Yeah. And that's what I'm hearing you say.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so let's transition into how you were using alcohol as a kid and then as a young adult.
Pivotal moment. I mean, I'll never forget it. I was one who would go to a party and kind of watch my more confident, braver friends, succeed, at that party life. And, I would show signs of trying to kind of do the guy girl thing, but it was not until, one fateful night, with a Zima, actually. And
for those too young to know what a Zima is. Yeah.
Do you know what a Zima is?
I mean, I've heard of it.
Okay. It was kind of like a Sprite.
Seltzer. Today's seltzer,
We were ahead of our times. Yeah, but
gotcha.
You actually put Jolly Ranchers in them to spike them with a little fun flavor. So anyway, one night we're on this playground. I'm on a playground, actually, with a group of friends from my church of all.
How old were you?
I think I was 13.
Okay.
And I was with some older kids, and there was this girl, and I remember as soon as that Zima kicked in, I mean, I was Rico Suave. I was like, what's up, girl? Just my talking got slower, and I was like, let's go, and I hooked that up. I closed the deal, and it was so easy, and I mean, I'm telling you, from then on, I wasn't smart enough to realize what I had found. This is all in retrospect.
Mm-hmm.
But that changed my life. I mean, I immediately went from very insecure, very nervous, maybe anxious, we probably would diagnose it as anxiety today or whatever, but all of a sudden, man, I was calm, collected, cool, funny, just whatever, dude. Dare me to do something.
Sure.
I'm out. I will do it. You want me to streak across that field? Let's freaking go.
All right, what's the craziest? Yes. What, it's the craziest thing you did while drinking that you're willing to say right now. Actually, don't think about it. Just say it.
Okay. My wife.
Close your ears.
No, I'm going to go 100%. Look, my mother-in-law knows me as an alcoholic. She knows this. And she's going to laugh when she hears this story. But there's a move I do. And okay, I don't know. Can we edit this? Like, if I get in trouble, there's a move I do.
Yes, we can edit
the mangina. All right.
Okay. And
it's not. I have not brought this out of the arsenal for a while. Okay, because I feel like I'm a little more confident, and I don't have to be the funniest person in the room. But I would.
This is already funny.
I would walk into gas stations and tuck everything I had between my legs, and I would proceed to tell everyone in the gas station that it got shot off, that I lost it in battle. And it was called the mangina.
And they believed
the hair.
You?
I mean, no, it was just cause a scene. My friends thought it was funny. And the backside of that is called the dead squirrel. And I don't know why.
Oh my gosh.
But look, I'm not proud of these moments. Uh-huh. I'm just saying, when Gooden buzzed, it became a fan favorite, from my friend. They were like, you won't do it tonight. And I was like, the hell I won't watch this. And Lainey knows about this. And I actually have, for some reason, early on in my marriage, I thought it was funny. I've done this in my in-laws' house. Walked into my mother-in-law's living room with my father-in-law sitting there, and they're used They were used to me. And I do not do these things anymore. I'm so glad I've grown out of this whatever that that need, you know, for shock value attention. Mm-hmm. But yeah, again, that was a regular performance. That was something that was kind of my go-to move.
Unreal.
Yeah, I don't think I can rival that.
Mine
aren't funny.
My favorite thing is this, like, world famous country star was doing all this hopped up on Jolly Rancher flavored Zima.
Well, that we had picked that, you know, that's where it started.
Where were you at this point? Was it Jim Beam or what?
I mean, I was a big mixer, you know. I would do beer and liquor beer, all that stuff, you know,
whatever was available.
You know, anything and as much as I could. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think that was your, honestly, again, I look back at that and it does make me, it makes me laugh, but it's also just, it's kind of sad, you know. It's like, did I really need that laughter, you know, that much, you know? And I did, you know, I just wanted laughter. Mm-hmm. I wanted that attention again, you know, mm-hmm. and I was willing to just look like a fool, you know?
Well, I think that the underlying theme there is such, what you bring up is so powerful, because for so much of the time, especially in our formative years of drinking,
yeah,
the drive behind it is the need for connection.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's whatever form we can get,
right?
The one that feels the most rewarding,
right,
is where we're going to go.
Right.
So the worst part about recovery, or not the worst part, the challenging part about recovery is to come up with these stories, either where we're reacting totally ridiculous or reacting in bad or negative or mean ways for attention. Like making, my go-to would be to cut down other people sometimes. And even though I understand addiction much better today, there's a big bunch of shame that goes with when I'm reminded of some of the things that I did.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I mean, your party trick is freaking 10 out of 10 right there.
No, you know, yeah. And then the weirdest isn't the right word, but the most difficult thing for me about recovery was when you take that, I thought recovery was like, it would fix everything, you know? And what it really just did was it removed like a really powerful and negative symptom of myself, I guess. But then all that stuff, like all the reasons that I wanted that laughter, they're still there. And you're like, oh shoot, you know? I don't know. It's just life, you know? And you realize, you know, honestly, removal for me as a country singer, it was like, man, maybe my occupation is an addiction as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like the whole comedian symptom. You know, is like the saddest person in the room is the one making everybody laugh, and it was that. I feel like you're about to say something
I do.
super smart.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about if it's super smart, but I feel that to the core. And I really firmly believe that, you know, the things that we're gifted as, you know, by God or whatever your higher power is, as our talents and gifts, they can absolutely get used to our detriment if we're not in a healthy place.
Bingo.
So, I mean, you know, you talk about it could be an addiction. Well, sure. Yeah. Are you in an unhealthy place trying to use it to fill a void that you're not paying attention to some type of emotion you need to be feeling right now?
Then,
yes. Yeah.
Yes. And I'm guilty.
So I want to hear, and yeah, you know, I do want to hear like what the crash and burn and the turn was for you.
Yeah.
For actually stopping.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I have no other way of explaining it. Than just, you know, I was going to die. I mean, look, I'm not a like health nut or, you know, I'm not a doctor or anything, but I just woke up one Saturday in October, 8 years ago. And I was working at Costco really early, you know, and I was working from 4 a.m. till about 11. I would go write and then I'd go play shows, you know, and we had six kids at the time. So, you know, I was trying to be a dad. And honestly, I think I pushed my body to its physical limitation, you know, like whatever your organs do with alcohol, I think they were tired. Mm-hmm. And I woke up on a Saturday and just, I mean, I was like, if I do this again today, I'll probably die. You know, I don't know how to explain it, but that's how I felt. I just...
What did your consumption and consequences look like at that point? Like, how had they escalated for you?
Shoot. At that point, my regular day was... I mean, I had a handle of vodka always in my car. Mm-hmm. I would drink it in my coffee and work. I would stock produce. Yep. So it was just manual labor, and I could do that, you know, just fine. But I would drink vodka with my coffee all morning. This sounds funny, kind of reminds me of Zima, but I would play shows in the afternoon. There were these luncheons for the Bluebird. And I'd do two or three of those a week, and I'm grateful that the Bluebird would hire me, but I would hit the same gas station every day, and I'd pop two Twisted Teas. I know that's silly, but they're really good and refreshing. It was almost like Gatorade.
Yeah. So that's what I would tell myself.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. This is healthy.
Just like
this
Gatorade.
This is a health drink.
Yeah.
It's Pedialyte. Right. Yeah. But I would hit those to get through the show, maybe have a drink, you know, at the bar, but no one would know that I'd already had that. And then, you know, if I wrote, you know, I'd get that vodka out, keep that going all day. And then usually nights was just beer, you know, because I could do that with friends or buddies. But I would usually go to Broadway Brew House, you know, have a couple, stop somewhere, you know, on the way home. And every single night, my wife, I would usually fall asleep on the couch. And she would take it out of my hand before I spilt it, you know, on myself. And then, you know, I'd wake up and start over. You know, that was my regular, you know, thing.
This podcast is brought to you by Promises Behavioral Health. If you or a loved one are struggling with trauma, addiction, or mental health, we are ready to answer your questions and help you take that next step. Call our admission center at 888-648-4098 or visit us online at www.promises.com. Our team is ready and waiting to answer the call for help.
There were so many ways in what you just described about the why I drank this in front of these people, what I did at lunch, you know, all those things. And I think it just perfectly for me, I related to a lot of that, because you get to the point where it's time to stop, and like our behavior looks a lot like that. I think many of us does. And where we just got this whole thought process behind who I can drink in front of, what I have to drink if I'm drinking in front of them, the story that it has to be if, like, you don't want them to know that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like all of that. Like
it's a serial killer. Like, people don't know it, but in your brain, you have like yarn attached to tacks and how, where you're going to go, how you're going to get it, how you're going to drive home, what number you're going to say when your wife asks how many of you had, that's believable. You know, how can you justify just staying a little bit longer, you know, and you become kind of amazing at it. You know, you're actually quite, it's a talent.
It is.
Really?
Yeah.
So you wake up. So I needed two DUIs and I got fired at Channel 2. Mm. And that's what's in judge ordered to rehab. Yeah. You woke up, which is pretty typical. I needed exterior forces pushing on me to get to sobriety. You woke up on a Saturday and said no more.
Mm-hmm.
How the hell do you do that?
I have no you know, I'm quite familiar with many, many people's stories. And as we all know, none are the same. But I just, you know, I what happened to me, and I think this is probably similar to a lot of people, is I quickly became addicted to sobriety. Mm. You know, I one day turned into two, and then probably a lot of people share this personality trait, but it becomes like a, I win. Like bad. I actually have a song called Beer in the Fridge about one beer that sat in the mini fridge of my studio. And I literally, this sounds silly, but I would open it, look at it, and beat it, you know, every day. I would just, whatever, you know, I'm not going backwards. And then, you know, 2 days turn into a week. And then that, I mean, sobriety is a high, man. If you haven't been sober for 5 years, you know, that fifth, sixth, seventh day of waking up, showering, fresh, shaving, having a nice breakfast that's not like a bag of Dorito, you know, you find that you begin to cope with life with how fresh and like, let's go. Like I actually love air, you know? And so that, to me, that wasn't necessarily like a righteous thing to help me heal, but it allowed me to sustain where I could begin to learn about recovery, you know, and things like that. And so, yeah, a week turned into a month, and then, you know, then you're proud of yourself. Yeah. You know, that's another false like thing that'll help you.
Yeah.
You're like, let's go, man. You know, let me tell you how many days I'm sober. You know, what up? I'm conquering it, you know. And, but, you know, it is all by the grace of God. Mm-hmm. 1,000%. You know, I think healing from addiction is a lifelong process. And I don't think you ever finish recovering.
No.
But yeah, I mean, that was my, and honestly, I quit. Another thing is essentially I quit smokeless tobacco, the same day.
Whoa.
And if that makes sense,
we got like, an alien right here.
No. For me, it kind of reminds me of like, if you're having to get a shot, you know, and somebody squeezes your hand, it's just so it takes your mind off of that. I do feel like that they were like balancing each other out, if that makes sense. You know, the
you honestly, were already in pain.
Yeah, it was misery.
Yeah.
But then it was like sobriety and the cleanliness, that addiction to that also helped with the smokeless tobacco thing. And I mean, I've you know, I've had backslide almost, you know, moments with both, you know, but I do think them at the same time, actually, it didn't make it worse. It helped. It was like one or the other to focus on, if that made any sense. I don't know.
Yeah, that makes all the sense in the world.
Right.
I wish I'd done that. So, yeah, that ended up being a 10-year battle with
it's
smoking
hard.
Cigarettes.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
You still miss cigarettes?
I don't miss them. I'm actually immensely grateful now that I was finally able. I tried to quit so many times, and you know, it wasn't until my brain tumor that I was able to force to stop smoking. I don't think I'd still be smoking today if the doctors hadn't intervened. I needed that.
Yeah.
I say all the time, and this might be in existence, but if there is a 30-day treatment for nicotine where they like take you away and remove you from it, and it's all about nicotine, like I was at the point where I wanted that. I would have gone to that, you know, but I, you know.
I think, I think quitting smoking for me was way harder than quitting drinking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or tobacco. Or,
yeah. Yeah. It was a bitch.
So, wow. 2-1.
That's
mad respect.
Yep.
Well, like I said, man, it is not, I don't have, you know, you guys know, you, how many years is everybody sober here?
12?
13.
Okay. So I think you would agree. I'm not where y'all, I'm behind y'all. But I'm at least to a point where I look back, and with the knowledge I have of kind of my family's you know, struggle with that. Statistics. It's a miracle. I mean, it's an absolute miracle.
Yes.
That any of us can rid ourselves, you know, of that usage. And then there's a, again, you just learn, what else are you using? You know, it just, we've gotten rid of those that are publicly taboo, you know, but we're still using the stuff that the world says it's okay to use,
right.
You know, and,
sure.
And we're working on that though, you know, and, but yeah, it is completely by the grace of God. As a matter of fact, man, I have a best friend named Craig, and he led me to Christ, okay? And he actually said, I don't remember saying this, but he says that I said in a vulnerable moment with him, which I was, I'm sure I was intoxicated, that I said if I could quit drinking, that I would believe, that I would come, you know, to believe that that there is a God. There's a maker of all things who loves me and has, you know, sent his son to rescue me from myself. And I don't remember saying that. But you know, again, retrospect is awesome, man. You know, when you look back and you know, your wife or your friend like that reminds you of things you put on the table. Again, I don't remember saying that, but again, I can only attribute. I think releasing yourself, freedom from addiction, I think that is one thing on earth that cannot be misunderstood as a blessing.
Sure.
Like you said, you know, our gifts and talents. A lot of people go, man, you got a platform. They don't know the ickiness. They don't know the grossness. They don't know how much I love the applause. You know, they don't know that.
Yeah.
And they're like, it's a beautiful thing. God gave you this gift. And I'm like, you don't know. You don't know what it does in my marriage. You don't know what it does in my soul. So I don't know if it's a blessing or not, you know? But I do know freedom from that and freedom from substance abuse. That's like a real blessing. That's a taste of heaven, this side of heaven. It just really is. And we'll never be freed from all of them. I mean...
I think
it's
that's
like my
part
fifth
of the human
cup
experience.
Of coffee, okay?
Right.
You know, it is. It's exactly right. It's. But I don't know where why I even started this little.
I mean, I feel like
detour.
You were going down the logic trail of just like that. You know, we on our own we stumble and we can't do it on our own. Like we.
Well, I like that you were basically saying there had been a seed planted in your life about faith, clearly,
right, yeah.
Before you got sober.
Yeah.
And even when you were drunk, it came out.
Yeah.
Right, and Craig saw that. And now you can have that relationship with a higher power without alcohol and substances.
Yeah.
And that's what's really... So that story for me says... And this is why I was mad at you earlier for being mean to the younger walker.
Yeah.
We're not bad people. You know, I feel like we're all good folks, and not just people in recovery, but people in general. And things happen to us, and there's external stuff that screws it up. And the goodness in you was always there, right? And it just it came out so much more rich and pure after you put down the alcohol. And that faith that you talked to Craig about when you were drunk is able to shine through in a much more pure way.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I don't, just for the sake of being in an interview and disagreeing, I don't think we're good. I think that's why we need Christ. Is this at the core? We're not. We don't want... I don't wake up and naturally want good things. I'm a selfish individual at my core. I mean, would y'all agree or disagree? I mean, I don't.
I mean,
my motives are continually laced with nastiness. I can make the best. I can give to the homeless from myself. You know what I mean? I can take a beautiful action, and there is a negative motive. I mean, that's just me. I mean, I even love my wife selfishly. I can't love my kids 100% selflessly. Part of me wants them to make me look awesome. And that's just, that is, to me, that might be human nature, which is the point why I need rescuing, not from you, not from my dad, not from my mom, not from any malnourishing nurturing I got. I need, not from cancer, I need a savior to save me from myself. Because I am not good. I do not wake up and naturally think of myself less. You know, I wake up and I go, what's in this life for me? And that's why I need, that's why I'm so grateful for Jesus. Because otherwise I don't think there's any rescue for me. If that makes any sense.
Well, you and I just have totally different worldviews on there, which is absolutely fine.
Right, right.
And I love and respect what you're saying. I do not think, I'm not into the original sin. I'm not into the, I'm not into the people are bad thing. And I totally get what you're saying because I have the same, but I guess I choose to believe about myself and others. I mean, I know that I'm highest when I'm serving somebody else. And when there's nobody around and there's no cameras and there's not even a witness, I love helping other folks or serving other folks. I mean, I do a thing on Saturday mornings, you know, where you give out food in Nashville to anybody who wants it. I mean, those are the things where I feel most connected with spirit and most good about life. And I think that's what's innate in me. Like I said, just two different worldviews. But I do hear what you're saying, and I do have, I certainly have things that, some urges or whatever, some desires sometimes. But I know that I'm most connected when I'm doing something that's healthy and for other folks.
There you go.
I feel like I sit somewhere in between the two of you with
literally.
My world. And you're so funny. And I think the thing that I just like to add to that is that no matter if it's you or what your stance, yours or mine, there's something to be said for grace. And no matter what your higher power is, I'm super grateful that there's grace for the person I wake up for, wake up as, the person I show up as lunch, as at dinner. And I always have the opportunity to get on my knees and pray, to ground myself with whatever practices bring me to, to a place of surrender. And I think that's one area where what I just love so much about recovery is that it brings all of these spiritual and worldviews where we can all sit at a table together and connect about how these themes are helping us to be better, get better, heal.
You just did a great job of, I love that people can have differing opinions. Two, that was awesome what you just said. And three, we haven't talked about it, but like an AA meeting, where else do people put your ego on the rack and walk in a room? And look, I've gotten up and talked at an AA meeting and it's been for all the wrong reasons. It's been just to perform.
Yeah. Yeah.
Haven't we all?
Yeah.
Let me tell you my mangina story so you can all laugh, but what a merciful place where you walk in and you just say, I'm an idiot. Are you an idiot too? Mm. And everybody goes, yeah, I am. I'm an idiot and I need y'all. You don't do that in the world. We're actually not encouraged to do that. You don't do that in a church. I don't.
Right.
In a church, I feel like I got to have khakis on. My kids got to not say words that they might say in the car. can't sing certain songs of mine. Can't, yep. you know, yep. you can't say keep your daughters off the pole in church. You know, you gotta sing hymns. But
right.
anyway, my point is recovery, just the space of recovery is, it, to me, that's, we're all in recovery. Even if you're not, sorry, you are. Hmm. You are. We, every single human is recovering from humanity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's so much fun to find your people who can relate. You know, that's why I love talking to Brad.
Yeah.
And I say things that I'm like, man, you might not want to say this in public to Brad. I'm vulnerable with people like y'all, because none of us are sitting here going, tell you what, man, I got it figured out now. You know,
right.
we're all just going, man, I don't have it figured out today. Y'all want to talk about it?
Yeah.
Because it'll help me get to tomorrow, hopefully in a better place.
Nice. Nice. Vulnerable and authentic. And indeed. We can do that in 12-step meetings.
Yeah. Yes. It's a graceful play. Grace exists there. Mercy.
Yeah.
Forgiveness. Forgiveness for yourself.
Yep.
You know, you can walk in there and it can be hard on your, you know.
Well, and the beautiful thing is we carry it with us wherever we go. It's not just in the rooms.
Right.
And so we're here and we're embracing that today in this space. And I know we're really just about out of time, and I want to close this up by asking you quite possibly one of the most important questions. You know, we can talk all day long about what the story is and what it was like. But if you had to narrow down some of the things that made the biggest difference in your recovery journey, what would you say those things are?
Shoot. I mean, I'm a broken record with this one, man. I mean, if I died today and you were like, hey, you get one thing to take out of that house, you know, it would be the loss of our seventh kid, Oakley. And I was 2 years sober, and there's a billion reasons that I can't really, I'm not no psychiatrist, okay? So I don't know how to explain this fully, but I didn't really want to stay sober till then. Mm-hmm. I remember the day we buried her. She was a stillborn, and you know, I know a lot of people experience this. Mm-hmm. And I remember dirt on my boot from filling up the hole, you know, at the cemetery. And I remember leaving that day and wanting to explode or implode or whatever, some kind of plode.
Yeah.
And I wanted to fight. And, you know, I feel like any pent up anger, you know, you and I have talked about a lot of anger, and it all came to that moment. You know, that was the thing about life that just, it's like I was a shaken up Coke, and it just popped that day. And I wanted to fight. I wanted to either just destroy someone or something, or be destroyed and go to prison. I don't know. I can't explain it, okay? I needed to release, just needed that release. And I drove to 55 South from my house in Franklin, and I went to open my Honda door, and I left my wife and kids. I don't know what my kids were doing, but my wife was just sitting on the couch crying. You know, we had just left our daughter's funeral, and I did not have my wallet in the door. Now, my wallet just lives in my door in case anybody wants to steal it. And I drove back home, and I was just going to get my wallet. I was just going to get my wallet and go right back. And when I walked inside, I saw my wife, and I felt the shame. You know, I felt that selfishness. I went, man, this is all my wife needs right now. You know, she her body's recovering from delivering a lifeless child.
Yeah.
You know, her mind, my kids are all different ages dealing with they buried a sibling today. You know, and my response to that was like, let's just go fuck it all up. I'm out. And that realization was brilliant for me, just to see, you know, again, just see me in the mirror for what I was about to do. And my wife helped me find an AA meeting. I confess, I told her, I said, I just pleaded for her forgiveness, for what I didn't do, but was all about to do. And she helped me find an AA meeting, and I walked in that AA meeting, and I have no joke, the first dude that got up, I didn't talk to anybody, I just looked at my boots. I remember I had green boots on, and I just looked at the dirt on it. I just will never forget the dirt on my shoe. And the guy stood up and he said, I was angry. That was the first sentence. He was kind of recounting his one day chip, you know. And that's all I needed to hear. And I left. I didn't talk to anybody there. I didn't want to talk to anybody. And I went home and I had an amazing phone conversation with my friend Craig. We just cried on the phone. But that is when, that night, my heart just began to soften to this whole recovery process. That was me literally walking through the door of the recovery room saying, I'm just weak. I can't do this. I can't do life on my own without a substance, you know.
Yeah.
And that was it. I mean, that, again, that was the greatest thing. It's funny. I have a unique perspective on life, I think, because the worst thing that ever happened to me was by far the best. And I've experienced some really, really good things according to the world. I mean, some really great things, yeah. Some beautiful things. I have a family that's alive. I have kids that are alive. We've had massive success on a level that most people dream of, but all that stuff pales in comparison to my Savior Jesus Christ, and that day is the one. That's
beautiful.
Yeah, I hope I don't have to experience something else that hard, but that was a very pivotal, unforgettable, beautiful day in my life that didn't feel good, but I'm most grateful for.
People on the outside, I think that's one of the gifts of sobriety, would go, wow, that you would want to take that with you. That's so hard, right? Like, but that's the gift of sobriety, is the perspective and how much of a tool that is for you, a precious, precious life tool that helps you keep everything where it's supposed to be.
Yeah, and perspective.
It's amazing.
Sorry for your loss.
Yeah, boy. Yeah. No. Yeah. Dude, that kid's life that didn't even begin has made more of an impact than me, than me, Laney, any of my kids could ever have. And so that's a beautiful thing to watch.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. No, anytime, man. I'm glad, you know, y'all asked the right questions.
Man, this has been so great. And I want to thank you, and thank you, Brad.
Yeah.
Marissa, thanks for hooking this up. This has been such a great episode. Switch it to a really funny thing real
Come
lastly.
On.
I gotta know who was behind shaving your beard off.
Oh, that it was a whim. You know, my team and I, we had just we had new music coming out, and we were like, I don't know. I just said, like, what about losing the beard? Which is kind of scary. I mean, I'm not superstitious, but since I've had the beard, things have been going really, really well.
Well, yeah, that makes sense.
And so when I went home, I asked my kids, I was like, would y'all care if we lost the beard? And they were like, you won't shave it.
And that's all you needed. You just needed the challenge.
Look at that. Back to the, I love a dare. And so we all stood together in the bathroom and just shaved it off. And now I love it. It's polarizing though. I get people are loud, man. They'll let you know if they don't like it. So socials are all over the place, but I enjoy it, man. I plan to be Ted Lasso for Halloween.
Nice. That's good.
So it's perfect, right?
Yes,
you can pull absolutely off a mustache, man. You got Thanks.
You'll never do it, Patrick.
Both of y'all.
Shit, you'll never do it.
Stop. Stop.
Would you do a mustache?
Well, he knows me well enough. I got a little bit of what you have, so I'm probably going to show up to the next podcast.
There you go.
Mustache on. Yeah. Oh, man. Well, this has been great. Thank you for answering
all of our questions,
however annoying they might have been. But
by the way, you've been saved from, he wanted you to teach him. Fancy dance.
And you've
been spared.
Your hard stop is sparing you from that. So
nice.
Yep. But anyway,
I can teach you off camera.
All right. Thank you again.
Dude,
I really
appreciate
it.
Thanks for having me. Good times, guys.
Absolutely.
Love talking to y'all.
And with that, I will remind each and every one of you that it is never too late to start loving yourself, and you're only ever one decision away from a completely different life.
This podcast is brought to you by Promises Behavioral Health. If you or a loved one are struggling with trauma, addiction, or mental health, we are ready to answer your questions and help you take that next step. Call our admission center at 888-648-4098 or visit us online at www.promises.com. Our team is ready and waiting to answer the call for help.